This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Alert, hourly update, breaking crime news now.
I'm Jackie Howard. Brian Koberger will be sentenced on Wednesday for his admission that he murdered four University of Idaho students. The proceeding will be live streamed 9 a.m. Mountain Time from the Ada County Courthouse in Boise. With Koberger's guilty plea, he avoided a potential death sentence. For months, there has been a sweeping gag order surrounding this case. Now, 4th District Judge Stephen Hippler agreed to lift that order. Media representatives also asked Hippler to immediately unseal hundreds of documents in the case, but the judge says he would go through the documents carefully to determine which ones could be made public. That process will not start until after Wednesday's sentencing. Our Nicole Parton has more on what the lifted order means.
Allowing attorneys, prosecutors, law enforcement personnel, and others associated with this notable case to communicate freely with the media.
It is a little bit like a, water will find low ground. In this case, the media is going to write about something regardless about this case. The lifting the non-dissemination order does not require the counsel or others who were previously bound by it to speak. And the state has indicated that they don't intend to until after the sentencing. At this point, I just don't think that that I can justify the continuation of the non-dissemination order. I think the rights of the public to information in this case is paramount.
Hippler determined that the gag order was unnecessary now that Koberger has entered a guilty plea, meaning the case will not proceed to trial. The broad order had been in effect since 2023 and faced challenges from multiple news outlets, which argued it infringed upon the First Amendment rights of a free press. Earlier in July, the 30-year-old Koberger pleaded guilty to the murders and accepted a plea deal that entails serving four consecutive life sentences. This agreement, which has sparked differing opinions among the victims' families, enabled Koberger to evade the death penalty and a highly publicized trial. Prosecutors revealed that Koberger, a criminal justice student at the time of the murders, had meticulously premeditated the attack that resulted in the deaths of Madison Mogan, Kaylee Consalves, Zaina Kernoodle, and Ethan Chapman. The students were discovered dead in a rental home near the University of Idaho campus on November 13, 2022. Investigators pointed to DNA evidence, cell phone data, and surveillance footage that linked Koberger to the stabbings, which sent shockwaves through the campus community and left residents of Moscow, a peaceful college town in northern Idaho, terrified.
Motive for Brian Koberger's attack on the four students is still unknown. War Crime and Justice News after this.
I'm Jennifer Gould. The two-week manhunt that gripped a tranquil Maine town with terror is finally over. But the shocking truth has only deepened the horror. A 17-year-old boy has been arrested in the savage killing of Sunshine Sunny Stewart, the beloved 48-year-old marine biologist whose lifeless body was found brutalized after a solo paddleboarding trip. President Susan Creighton spoke to CBS 13.
Just relieved there's been an arrest. There was all kinds of rumors circulating about the New England serial killer. I'm glad there's been an arrest. I hope they can make it stick.
The stunning breakthrough in Union brings a suspect to justice, but the chilling question now is, why was Sunny killed? Stewart, a vibrant Tennant's Harbor resident and boat captain, renowned for her radiant smile and passion for the sea, ventured out alone on July 2nd. Her destination, the secluded 600-acre Crawford Pond, accessible via Micmac Cove Campground, where she had rented a camper. She never returned. A frantic midnight call sparked a massive multi-agency search. A drone aided the grim discovery. Sunny's body was found near 100-acre island after 1 a.m. on July 3rd. An autopsy revealed the awful truth. Stewart died from strangulation and blunt force trauma, her death a homicide. The Maine State's Police Major Crimes Unit plunged into a relentless investigation. Detectives canvassed every inch of the area, painstakingly reviewed hours of campground surveillance footage, and chased down every lead. The suspect, a local Maine teen who had been vacationing near the pond with his family each summer, was nabbed without incident. This Union resident spoke to ABC News.
It's a scary thought that, you know, somebody around here has done something really horrific.
The 17-year-old, whose identity is shielded under Maine's juvenile laws, was hauled to Long Creek Youth Development Center in South Portland. Officials are keeping a tight lip on if he knew Stewart or what twisted motive drove him to commit such a savage act, citing the ongoing investigation. While currently being held as a juvenile in Maine, as in many states, prosecutors can petition the court to have juvenile charges with severe crimes like murder tried as adults, a decision that would determine if his case moves to adult court proceedings. In the meantime, police are urging anyone with information or who may have witnessed anything in that area from July 2nd between 6 and 9 p.m. to contact them at 207-624-7076.
Hello, Seth.
What's up, Hudson?
I'm Drew Nelson. You know you're a repeat offender when the cops greet you by name as they're cuffing you. Suspect Seth Schluter greeting Deputy Hudson following a road rage incident ending with the father of three drunk, violent, and breaking into a stranger's home in Wayne Township, Ohio. Last Friday, around 5:30 p.m., 30-year-old Schluter stopped his car in the middle of State Route 727 near the Stone Lake Park Dam. A woman honked and drove around him. Schluter, with his young kids in the car, followed her to her house on Lair Road.
Got to the house, and when she arrived there, the homeowner, the husband, was on the front porch. He went out and spoke to the guy, and then she, the wife or victim, fled behind the residence. He then went to retrieve her.
Chief Deputy Mike White with the Claremont County Sheriff's Office on WXIX.
When they came back from behind the residence, he entered the home, and at that point, the male inside ended up striking him.
So much for trying to calm Schluter down. Deputies say his children were all under the age of 5. He pulled them out of the car and entered the couple's home without permission. Inside, Schluter ransacked the place. When the couple entered the home, he punched the husband in the face and ran off with his kids. The husband was treated at the scene for minor injuries. The woman told reporters she hadn't even realized that Schluter followed her home until he was already in their driveway. Deputies tracked Schluter down later that day at a convenience store on State Route 727. Here is Detective Sergeant Yvonne Shepherd.
There was an arrangement made with his spouse to help deputies apprehend him at a mutual location.
Schluter appears shirtless, shoeless, and silent, other than greeting the arresting officer. Body cam footage shows him slumping into the back of the cruiser. His kids were turned over to relatives. A judge set his bond at $200,000. Surprise, he has a history of domestic violence, burglary, drug possession, and previous DUI, including one in an elementary school zone. Schluter now faces charges including aggravated burglary, assault, menacing, child endangerment, and 2 counts of DUI.
I'm Nicole Parton. Rex Huerman, the alleged serial killer linked to the Gilgo Beach murders, appeared in court marking just over 2 years since his arrest. The much-anticipated Fryer hearing regarding DNA evidence continued, drawing significant attention. The man from Massapequa Park, charged with the killings of 7 women, listened intently as the defense called forensic DNA expert profiler Dr. Dan Crane to testify. Crane expressed reservations about the DNA testing methods employed in this case, suggesting that this particular program being utilized, which involves cutting-edge DNA analysis techniques, signifies a, quote, paradigm shift from traditional protocols. As previously reported, this hearing commenced in March and focuses on the potential admissibility of specific DNA evidence in the trial. The decision made here could greatly influence the proceedings of an already intricate and highly scrutinized case. Despite the highlighted public interest, the actual trial may still be far off, with the defense indicating that it is unlikely to start before 2026. Before setting a trial date, the court must first rule on the admissibility of the DNA evidence and address the defense's request to separate the cases. For the latest crime and justice news, follow Crime Alert Hourly Update on your favorite podcasting app. With this Crime Alert, I'm Nicole Parton.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.